The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2011 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2011. If you have purchased this audio CD, you are free to make multiple copies of it for your own or your school's use. You may not sell copies of this audio or post it on the Internet. If you would like to find out more about the work of ACCS, please visit our website at www.accsedu.org. To order additional talks from this conference, please visit the ACCS website and click on Conferences. Thank you for your support of ACCS.
Good afternoon. Let's go ahead and get started. This is Thou Shalt Keep the Feast, Organizing and Implementing a Classroom Feast Day. My name is Wendy Phillips. I teach third grade at Trinitas Christian School in Pensacola, Florida. So let's start off with prayer. Isn't it nice we get the fun workshop feasting? All right, let's pray. Gracious Father, I just thank you for today and another opportunity, Father, to serve you and to fellowship with my brothers and sisters here. And Father, I just pray today that this time together will be beneficial and productive. And Father, I pray that we'll everything that we say, everything that we do today in this next hour will glorify you and bring honor to your name. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. In addition to being the third grade teacher, I'm also the lead teacher on our grammar hall. And so in that capacity, I often get to see little students that are in the hall waiting for their teacher to come and speak to them about something. And so one particular day, I saw a little first grader standing out in the hall. And so I thought, well, I'll take care of that for the teacher. So I talked to him. He was standing in the hall because he was pouting about they were reading caps for sale. And they had to earn caps somehow. They all brought caps. And he didn't earn as many caps as his little classmates. And so he was upset about that. So he was pouting. So he and I talked about the sin of self-centeredness and thinking too highly of ourselves and not rejoicing with those who rejoice. And so I told him, I said, do you know what a pity party is? I said, it's where you feel sorry for yourself out of selfishness. And I said, you'll be the only one at a pity party. And I said, every man loves a party, but nobody likes a pity party. So he went home. His mother told me the next day that she had talked to him about our discussion. And she said, did you learn anything about what Mrs. Phillips talked to you about? And he said, yes, I learned that every man likes a party, but nobody wants to go to a porta potty. And so I said, we probably agree with both of those statements. So I'm going to talk to you about the first part of it. Everybody likes a party. Everybody loves a celebration. That's something that God put into us, whether we're pagans or Christians. Everybody loves a celebration. And so today I'm going to talk to you about four basic things: the purpose of feast, why we like to party, what God's intention was for us in celebrating, the nature of the feast, planning ahead for your feast, and the components of a feast. And so the first two parts, I'm going to go through pretty quickly the purpose of the feast, because I know you want the nuts and bolts of how to put on a feast day, and it's just so much fun. My first feast day at Trinitas was Egyptian Day, and I dreaded the day. It was that whole fear of the unknown, you know. So, but I thought, well, I'll just plan the stew out of it, just like I do everything else. And the night before, I could hardly sleep. I was just excited about that upcoming feast day. And I thought, I wonder if I can't sleep, I bet my students can't sleep. And sure enough, the next day they were, you know, too excited to sleep. And that's a good thing. You want them so excited that they just can't sleep. And they'll get that if you're excited. And I promise you, you'll be excited about your feast day if you're prepared and if you've planned well and planned in great detail. If you don't know what's going to happen the next minute, you won't be excited and you'll be awake for a different reason. So today, let's see if we can't help you put on a feast that's fun for everyone, including yourself. I found that feast days are not days to dread. They're days to look forward to. Now, they're hard work. Those of you that have put on feast days, you know they are hard work. But they're so much fun, and those are days that you just never forget. So the first thing we're going to talk about is the purpose of feast. And we see in Scripture, we can go to Scripture and very quickly and very easily find those reasons that God had us celebrate and had us have feasts together. And for one thing, they're a memorial of God's saving acts in the past. In Exodus 23, it says, "You shall keep the feast of unleavened bread in the month of Abib, for in it you came out of Egypt." And you can go to Leviticus 23. It lists all the feasts. If you're connecting your history curriculum from creation forward, and you're giving your students a grand idea of how God designed history, how God worked in men's lives and planned all of history, then you can do that so easily in your feast, referencing how God's design, why, and as people that live on the continent of North America, why we have Western culture, because we got it from the ancient Greeks. And so you can tie that in very easily. It's an opportunity to express thanksgiving. Deuteronomy 16 says, "The Lord your God will bless you in all your produce and all the works of your hands, so that you surely rejoice." And just in response to God's goodness and what he's provided for us, we can we celebrate. Thanksgiving for us is one of those celebrations. So many children come to the table ungrateful because they've just been given so much and not been taught to be thankful for the tiniest little thing. I think back to Little House on the Prairie. When I taught that book, whenever we got to the Christmas chapter, I would list on the board the items that Laura and her sisters would get. You know, the penny, the little heart-shaped cake, a candy stick, and a mug. And then I would have the whole class, we'd go down the row, and I'd say, "Tell me everything you got for Christmas this past year." And it's really an eye-opener to them. But look how much fun Laura and her family had with just those few things. And so it's an eye-opener for them. These feasts are just a great time to help our students be thankful for everything that has been given to them. It's also a welcome diversion to the rigorous workaday life. And The Chosen, Kompotok talks about the community on a festival or Sabbath, that they could forget the tumult of the week. And if your students have been working hard on a presentation or a project, your feast day is that big celebration after their hard push on in researching and preparing their projects. It's also a milestone marker. We all like to celebrate birthdays and wedding anniversaries and weaning feast and sheep shearing. I know at our last sheep shearing festival, we had a great time. But everybody likes to say, "You know what? We've been married 38 years today." Or, "You know, look, I finally finished this quilt." We all like to say, "Here's what happened. This happened back then, or now I'm finished with it," and everybody goes, "Congratulations." We love that. And as Christians, we do a lot of that with one another. We can have the tiniest victory and we celebrate. It's a good time. Let's go to Olive Garden, you know, to celebrate. So we just, God, I love that God put that in us to want to celebrate. In our class, when you, or in your class, when you finish a book and you culminate that wonderful adventure with a feast, it's just a wonderful time to say, we finished that book. Or, you know, you have to be careful not to have your Egyptian feast too early, because you don't even start your Egyptian history till the sixth card. And so you want to get into your Egyptian history well before you have your feast. And so it's almost like a rite of passage to say, oh, we have an understanding about ancient Egypt. Now let's celebrate that. And, oh, yes, I see that. And I know that. See? All right, the nature of the feast. If I push this the wrong way, it goes too fast and I can't get back. They're communal, no pity parties allowed. We do things together when we celebrate. The best Christmases, everybody knows, is when everybody's there, all the grandchildren are there. You're with your church family, your extended family. So the nature of the feast, we like to be together, we want to be together. You work together, you eat together, you dance together, laugh together. Full of rejoicing, everybody's rejoicing, there's excitement. Even solemn feasts like the Passover had a sense of expectancy and excitement. So you want your feasts to be exciting. And you want them to be unforgettable. And you can see that through Scripture, can't you? From the beginning to the end of Scripture, don't forget what God's done. Don't forget. Don't forget. And so that's when I go to plan a feast, I'll often think, how can I make this unforgettable? So that when they take their last breath, they're saying, that was a great Egyptian day feast we had, you know. So you want it, it just helps them in their love for that history. I usually start building up their excitement for these feast days probably too early, because I get excited about them too. But, you know, we talk about our beloved ancient Greece. And so by the time we have Zeus's family reunion, I mean, we're just, you know, in love with ancient Greece and everything about the Iliad and the Odyssey. We love Odysseus, and you know, we have our favorite characters. So it's almost as though we're stepping into a time past, because we have such a love for that particular period or particular book, whatever it is. All right, now I'm going to give you something to take to the bank, and I promise you it's true. Here's the key to a successful feast. I'm just going to tell you three things. Plan ahead. Plan ahead. Think. Like if you can just sit and think, that's 98% of your feast right there. Just thinking about what you're going to do and what you could do. And we're going to get into more of that in just a minute. And then the third thing you can take to the bank is get help. Ask people to help you, because there are a lot of people that are out there that have resources and have abilities that you might not have, and you can access those. So I'm going to get into all of that in just a minute, but before I do, I'm just going to pause the play button for a minute, because you might be saying, well, I'm not a plan ahead kind of person. I sort of like to fly by the seat of my pants, and, you know, 2 days before the feast, that's all the time I need. So let me just tell you why it's so important to plan ahead. Planning ahead allows you the time during your feast day to do the really important work of the feast, and that is to disciple your students. It's not about can they make this or can they make that. It's are they doing their best work? Are they complaining? Are they complaining by rolling their eyes or swishing it off to the side if it doesn't work for them? Are they speaking respectfully to their parents? Are they working together well? Are they being thankful when Mrs. Jones helps them make that basket and puts another reed into the basket? Are they saying, thank you, Mrs. Jones, for helping me? Are they speaking respectfully to one another? Are they speaking respectfully to their parents? Are they giving attention to their parents and to their grandparents? I'm able to now pay attention to what's going on with my students. I'm watching every move they make because I don't have to go find a pot to melt wax and to dip candles. I've already got that in place. I can pay attention when Johnny speaks unkindly to Mary at the water fountain during the break. And because that's the work of the feast day. Anytime you have them, you want to be discipling your students and watching for those type of issues. Also, I'm free to visit with parents and to give grandparents special attention and to visit with parents that I don't see as regularly as other parents that I see. So planning ahead frees up your mind. You don't have to worry about all those little details. You did those details months ago, and now you're ready to enjoy the day with your students. You have to enjoy the day with your students. You can't run around like a chicken with your head cut off and expect them to be relaxed and enjoyable and have the right attitude. So planning ahead helps you do all of that. Remember also, we're about making families strong. And when they see me irritated about something or at odds about this or somebody brought the wrong bread, you know, any of those kind of details, that just validates that kind of attitude at other family gatherings that they may have. I had a daughter-in-law that came. Their family was with us at Thanksgiving, and my mom and dad had come up at Thanksgiving, and my mom and I have always worked together very well and had the best time, and we worked that whole day in the kitchen, all three of us together, and she was very quiet. My daughter-in-law was very quiet, and then at the end of the day, she said, you and your mom worked that whole day, and not one crossword transferred between you. And that was a testimony to her of what it's like to work together in community and building those strong families. So plan ahead and think, and ask for help, okay? All right, the first thing we're going to talk about, we talked about the purpose of the feast and the nature of the feast, and I told you I was going to go through those quickly. And so the next two things are planning ahead for the feast and the components of the feast. So I've also, I don't know if you can see them, but I put some pictures. The light still might be a little bright, but I put pictures on this PowerPoint because I just wanted you to see some of the costumes and some of the settings. That's a sight, isn't it? Right there. Okay, here we go. Planning ahead for your feast day. The first thing, plan in the summer if you can. It's the time when our bodies are rested, hopefully our minds are rested. We can concentrate on what lies ahead. I do my best planning in the summer. When I'm cleaning my house, I'm just thinking. When I'm picking beans, I'm thinking. I try to get every detail planned. You're eventually going to do everything, right? Eventually, how you set the tables for your feast has to be thought through. Why not think it through in the summer? So if you can, plan ahead in the summer. You only have to do some a little bit every day or a little bit every week if you want to. And then everything's finished. Then all you have to do after your feast is tidy up your buckets that you have everything in, replace your consumables, and you'll have all next summer to do that. And then you're ready for your feast day the next year. So another benefit to planning early, planning in the summer, is if you need to buy more Sculpey for your cartouches, I'll show you some of these things. And I'm going to leave these up for a few minutes afterwards. You can come and look and get some ideas. And you probably have great ideas, too, that you might want to share with us. But you can use those Joann's coupons and get your 40, 50% off of your whatever it is that you need to replace in the summer. So the first thing, planning in the summer, is think big. Think like a third grader. Think like a second grader. What would be unforgettable? Unforgettable. And it's a free country, so you can think very, very, very big. What would be my best Egyptian day? What would be my best culture kit day or my best Olympic day? So think big. Just dream and think big. That doesn't mean that everything's going to happen. You can always back off of it, but go for it, and somebody might help you do it, actually. Only one thing that I really dreamed big that just didn't happen. I had room parents one year, and I said, here's my dream, to have some sort of log cabin out in the back lot. And I said, I haven't figured out how to make that happen. Do you think you could help me make that happen? And they said, well, we'll work on it. But, you know, that was probably dreaming a little bit too big. We don't have a log cabin yet. But I'm not finished dreaming. So, anyhow, think big. What would be unforgettable to a second grader? What would they go to bed that night and go, I just love doing that? What would be something that you would want to do if you were a third grader? What would you consider to be unforgettable as a third grader? Ask other teachers what they do. I'll get emails sometimes from other schools, teachers at other schools, and they'll say, I know somebody who knew you back in this day or whatever, and can you give me some ideas? So ask people. People have great ideas. You can't be your own standard. You can't think, well, I think that's a great idea. It makes it a great idea. Bounce it off somebody else and say, what do you think of this idea? And they'll say, that's a great idea to start with, but you could try this or try that. Our second grade teacher and I were talking on the way up here. If you're familiar, anybody in here teach second grade using the Veritas history? Okay. When you get to the unification of Upper and Lower Egypt, and, you know, it has the little paper crown, the double crown. Okay, well, I generally try to stay away from paper things, and we'll get to that later. But I didn't like the idea of making a paper double crown, and so I couldn't think of how to make the white, the Upper Egypt crown really great. I want them to take these things into their marriage with them is what I really, you know. Like their firstborn, they go, I have a gift for you. It's the double crown of Upper and Lower Egypt, you know. So anyhow, I thought of everything, and I walked my brain through, well, how would I do it this way or that way? Anyhow, what I came up with, I blew up a big balloon, one of the big giant ones, and I made a paper mache. We did paper mache, and then we painted them white. The downside is they look like cone heads instead of the shape of the crown. But anyhow, it's durable. Let me tell you, they're going to the grave with those crowns. So, but anyhow, they're hard to make. And the first year we made them inside, starch everywhere all over the floor. We had to mop. Oh, my goodness. Had to take them all home and patch up where they couldn't get it thick enough, and took 2-3 times doing it. But that's how we've done it every year. So the second grade teacher and I were talking on the way up here. What could we do to make an easier, more practical
kind of crown. And so, anyhow, we just bounced off ideas. We haven't come to a conclusion, but that dialogue helps you think, well, maybe we could do this. Well, what about that? Well, we could try this. And eventually you'll hit on something. We'll hit on something. You can email me if you have any ideas too. Okay? Solve that problem for us. Here's also, when you're planning big, don't despise the day of small beginnings. If all you can have your students do is put on a bathrobe and a towel around their head, do it. Okay, just you do that. And then next year, maybe you can get a piece of fabric and sew a little costume or something. So don't despise the day of small beginnings. You do what you can and you work within your budget. You want to be a good steward of your time and your money and your effort. And so work with what you have. All right, the second point up there is stay centered on the curriculum, and that's hard to do sometimes if you're really thinking big, because you might want to be so authentic and think so big that you jump into, you start with Olympic Day and then you bring it forward to the modern Olympics and the music that goes with Olympic Day, the Olympics now, and how do you compose music for the Olympics, see? And now you're away from the curriculum. So stay centered on your curriculum. Always go back to those, the purpose of the feast. What are you trying to do with this feast day? What are you trying to accomplish? What do you want to stick with them for that day? And keep that in mind. Choose a book or choose a period, a time. That's normally what we do. We read Chitty Chitty Bang Bang in third grade, and so usually we'll have a picnic just like they did. This next year I'm going to take them actually to the beach, and I don't know why I didn't think of that, because I don't think as big on Chitty Chitty Bang Bang as I do on the Greek feast and Culture Kitten Olympic Day. But we can have a picnic on a beach, just like they did in the book. Make sure your feast always has food, by the way. So, anyhow, you can have food on the beach. When we're at a far enough into doll airs, we're going to have our Greek feast. And the way we do our Greek feast is we join up with the seventh graders, and we pair a seventh grader with a third grader. And we assign a Greek god or goddess to each one that's connected in some way. Like Demeter, if we had three that we had on a team, Demeter, Persephone, and Hades. Something like that. Or Zeus and Athena, or Zeus and Hera, and so forth. So then those students, the seventh graders and the third graders, work together for a couple of weeks researching their gods and goddesses. And then they do a display board, a tri-board, and they'll dress in the dress of their Greek god or goddess. So, you know, Poseidon's probably going to have a blue beard, and you'll see a picture. We had a really great Medusa this year. You'll see her headgear on one of these. Then they get the day of the feast, they give their presentation together. They work on their little presentation. So it's a fun day. So you can take any book, any period, any day. We have Olympic Day. I'll wait 1 or 2 weeks after we've studied card 7 in the material to do Olympic Day, because I want them to really know what they're celebrating, and I want them to work up to that excitement of that day. Avoid, the next point on there is avoid overindulgence. And that's easy to do, again, if you're thinking big, because you think we can do this and this and this and this and this and this and this all in 4 hours, you know. And that can't happen very often. So if you're doing that, if you go overboard, then you're just, it's just self-serving and becomes this materialistic orgy, you know, like a trick-or-treat candy bag or something. So I did that 1 year with Little House on the Prairie. I wanted to do everything in the book, and it's humanly impossible to do every activity in the book. So don't overindulge. Think big, but don't overindulge. And then I always ask myself, do I want to stay stuck in the past, not in a bad way, or do I want to move forward to the present methods? And by that I mean, do I want to try to be as authentic as possible, or can I accomplish the same thing by using a modern technique? For instance, if we make Tutankhamun mask, I'll show you that one. And, you know, if I wanted to be really authentic, I'd get a volunteer and I'd drain all his body fluids out on a slanted board. And then, you know, you may cut everything out, put them in the... Okay. So, you don't have to be authentic. But I can get the point by making something like this. This is made with plaster strips. You can get them at Hobby Lobby, but it's the same if you broke your arm, that kind of strip. And toilet paper tube... The teacher's best friend, toilet paper tube. And so, anyhow, if you want to know how to make that, you can let me know. But you may have something that's even nicer and more durable. This, they're taken to their grave. Okay? So ask yourself, do I need to be authentic? When on Prairie Day, digging the garden, plowing the garden, now, you know, in the book, Pa and Ma, they spaded that plot of land, and you know, that would take about 4 weeks. We'd have to have Prairie Day for 4 weeks to make that happen. So we do have a dad or somebody come and till up our plot. Now, we still make it hard work, and if you were to look, I have the second grade special notebook. If you were to look in the notebook, you're going to see on that instruction page it says this needs to be hard work. We have an old hand plow. They dig with the plow. They get all the grass out. They work hard. They plant the seeds. They get a bucket. They carry water from who knows where to water that garden. So it's hard work. When those boys chop wood, it's hard work. And the instruction sheet says it needs to be hard work. So we don't let them complain or whine. They chop and they saw. They split wood. They keep the fire going. When the girls are making their little quilt patch like this, they have to move very, very, well, I don't want to say quickly. They just have to keep moving. And, you know, that doesn't happen a lot of times when children are sitting around doing something with their hands. So they have to keep working. It is hard work. So anyhow, I always think, is there a way that I can make it as authentic as possible and but not make it impossible? You don't want to frustrate them. You don't want them going, oh, no, another feast day we have to work like a Trojan, you know. So you want it to be fun and enjoyable and then have something. When they finish this, that's something to be applauded because they had to keep working very hard on it to get it done in that small space of time. Okay, the next thing we're going to talk about is compiling the notebook, and I'm just going to talk about the basics of putting a notebook together. The separate components of the notebook I'm going to do later, so don't panic. I know it's helpful to know, well, what are the items that would happen on a feast day? I am going to go over that. But first of all, I'm just going to talk about the notebook. This is my notebook for my special days in third grade. And every feast day that I have a separate divider. And what I would recommend is get the best dividers you can for your budget. If all you can do is a piece of orange construction paper out of the recycle box, then do that. But if you can get something more durable, you will save money in the long run. Now, here I have a new section for Misty because I'm ready to plan another feast day. And so I have this idea that just like the children in the book had to earn $100 to buy Phantom and some more money to buy Phantom's colt, then I am going to come up with some way for them to earn money, to do chores and earn money before the feast day. So you can see this feast day has nothing in it, okay? But that's going to be my next project, planning that feast day. I'm looking forward to that. So here's Olympic Day. See, it has the main divider, and all the components of my feast day have a separate divider. So you can see right there. In the handouts that I gave you some excerpts from some of these just so you get an idea. There's Zeus's family reunion. That's that Greek feast day that we do with the seventh graders. Then I have a culture kit day in third grade where we choose a country that was part of the Roman Empire, and they research their country. Then they have a shoebox that they decorate, and they put items in the shoebox that represent whatever it is that they're telling about their country. So that's Culture Kit Day, and then there's Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. It's my smallest feast day. It's basically a picnic. Okay, so the first thing to do is get you a notebook and get your dividers for each feast. If you're overwhelmed, this is a great place to start. Just get a notebook, get your dividers for each feast day, and that'll get you going for the time being, okay? Think details. I think through every single aspect of the feast, everything that we make. If I can make it, I make it. That way, if I'm making this, I know that I'm going to have to thread that needle about four times in making this. Can second graders thread a needle? See? Well, instead of waiting till that day and finding out that second graders cannot thread a needle quickly to keep this moving, I know I have to have enough moms there to help thread needles, see? And so are the seams too thick to sew through? I know what we need to do about the seams because I went through every detail before the feast day came. So think details. How do you want the table set? What color tablecloths? You know you're going to put tablecloths on those tables. Do you really want to think about that two nights before your feast day and try to scrounge around and find purple tablecloths or black tablecloths? You really don't. So think through, what do I want my tables to look like? What do I want on them? One of my things that I like the tablecloths to be ironed. So I put that in there. Do you need to call the man who's going to bring the ponies, the horses, and the cows for Cowboy Day? Do you need to call him the day before? Then write it down. Don't get to that morning and think, oh, you know what? I should have called him and reminded him to bring those horses today, you know. So think details. Write down every detail that you can think of. When I made the cartouche years ago, right there, that's for Egyptian Day. It's had a little accident since then. I was able to walk through every single step. If I'm going to do a step, the students are going to do a step. And you don't want them trying, you don't want the parents who are manning that table to have to figure out, well, how much clay goes around the outside of this cartouche. So I was able to make the inside, and then I weighed it on a little food scale, and I put that ball of clay in one bag. And then after I made that, I was able to weigh that little piece of clay and put it in another bag. So now on Egyptian Day, every student gets two bags of clay. So That just keeps me also from overbuying clay, or even worse, underbuying, not having enough. And then I'm set for the day. I don't even have to worry about explaining to the parents, well, it needs to be about the size of a hard-boiled egg or something. You know, it's a detail that you don't have to worry about that day. So think details as much as you can. Take copious notes. After your feast day is over, write down what worked and what didn't. Okay? Now, let me back up just a hair, because I do want to say this about the details. Everybody in here probably admits it's a good thing to get those details down. But not everybody is as neurotic as I am about those details. So, somebody around you probably is. So say, would you like to weigh and bag clay? And you'll probably find somebody that could do that for you, okay? And I'm not saying you have to think as many details, you know, as one or the other does, but think details, okay? Take copious notes. Write down what worked and what didn't work. If you've worked with another teacher, get together. What worked? Something might work one year and it doesn't work the next year. Get your room mom to take notes. When I finish my notebook in the summer, I make copies of everything, and I have a separate notebook for my room mom. And so she'll make notes in her notebook, and when she gives it back to me, then I update my notebook every summer. Okay, be specific. The way I think about it is, it's my party, and I'll do what I want to, sort of, you know. You don't want to be arrogant about it or unbending. You want to go with the flow as much as you've been designed to. And but I figure if I'm planning it, I can plan it the way that I want to. And I've never had a room mom say, too many details. You told us too much about what we needed to do. We wanted to just try to figure out at 10 o'clock the night before the feast what to do. You know, room moms appreciate having those details. Where do the columns go for the Greek feast? How does the drape work between the columns? Don't reinvent the wheel every year. Write down. Take a picture of where you put those columns and how you made the drape work and what your table looks like. I promise it won't lock anybody in. You won't have a carbon copy feast every year. I have pictures in my room mom notebook, and every year our table has looked different, but they can see the principle that you want. You want a white tablecloth, and you want some color fluffed around, and you want statues. And moms come up with all different wonderful things. But by giving them the details, then they can take what you've written and they can work from there and still stay within what you desire. If you say, whatever you want, you're going to get whatever, okay? And you want gold napkins at your Greek feast, you don't want Holly Hobby napkins. And so you have to say, we're having white tablecloths with gold napkins, okay? Otherwise, you're going to have birthday plates left over from little Johnny's fourth birthday. So be specific. If you want black tablecloths, say, I want black tablecloths, okay? The other reason that that's good to do is you can't control the culture in your classroom if you just say, well, whatever you want to do is fine with me, you know, because then it's going to go against your school culture or your classroom culture, okay? So there's a way that you can be specific and still go with the flow, that you might say, well, anything along this range is good. And then they'll say, how about this? And you could say, well, let's do that. Or, well, let's try to do something a little more gold. So, okay. I think I've already said that. Put pictures in there for future reference. That way you know how you set up for Culture Kit Day. Globes on the table and what kind of placemats there were. Our room moms make wonderful placemats with their country pictures from their country, and they laminate them, and we send them home. So I already know, I can tell you we'll have black tablecloths for that because it's a lot of red on those placemats. And the other thing is, if you're, I like to do all the crafts myself. Generally, I tell my room mom, if you get the food on the table right at 11 o'clock or 11:30, whatever it is, I'm happy. I'm doing all the crafts. So usually the night before, I'm setting up the crafts and they're setting up the tables, the feasting area. And I don't have to worry about it. I just have to go, oh, that's so beautiful, you know, because I've given them enough information to work with. So we have a statue for the Greek feast. We borrowed one year from a relative of a student. She owns a statuary place, and so she loaned us Hestia. And then the next year my class gave that to me for a birthday present. It was so nice. But then we found every year I was going, okay, now where did we put that? And so now I say it goes on the round table in the kindergarten classroom, and we put a box of copy paper over it, underneath it, and four books to support it. So now I don't have to think, how are we going to keep that statue from falling on somebody? Well, it's on the round table that I get out of the kindergarten class. I put a box of copy paper under it and four books, put a drape on it, and Hestia goes on top. So I don't have to think through that every year. And like I said, when you finish your notebook, make a copy of it for your room mom. Since I do all the crafts for the feast days, that's my favorite part, I just give her enough of that information to help her know what we're doing. But since she does all the food, I make sure she has every bit of information about the food in her notebook. All right, enlist help. And like I said, if you're not neurotic about this, somebody is. I promise you, they're out there. So, you can get your room moms to help. You can get parents. You want a lot of parents involved. You want that a family affair, those feast days. So we put sign-up sheets on the doors, and they sign up for the food. They sign up for the activities. Who's going to help them make cartouches? Who's going to make baskets or whatever, okay? So get help. People will have horses. If you're having cowboy day, I promise you somebody, unless you live in New York City, somebody has horses or cows that they could bring for you. For the medieval feast, we have a parent that does archery, so he brings all his nice archery equipment, and he teaches the students how to shoot. At the World Banquet, the first graders have a World Banquet when they finish their geography curriculum. And so we have parents and grandparents who have traveled extensively, and they come and they'll tell about what they've seen, and they'll show souvenirs. Often they'll have decorations that you want. They'll have artifacts that you want. For Prairie Day, we had a parent whose parent collected all sorts of old antique tools and really nice things that we could decorate the tables with. So you can ask people. Oh, I think I need to go to the next one. Hold on. Resources in the community. For the medieval feast, we had somebody from historic Pensacola come and with a spinning wheel and show the girls how to spin. They had cottle paddles for the wool and a spinning wheel. It's very nice. For the Greek feast, we've had Greek dancers, a lady come and teach how to dance. Teacher's aides, if they're still working on their degree, they'll often need service hours, so you can get teacher's aides to help you as well. And my favorite part is the older students. We have the older students help. For instance, on Prairie Day, they dress in jeans and a white shirt and suspenders. And they'll help for whittling with the boys. We like to have one-on-one. And so they'll help there. They'll help with the chopping, keeping the fire going. It's great fun. Those older students are a part of that discipling, those younger students, and they love being with each other. Inviting guests, you can kind of think through that because I want to move on. Do you want the parents to sit and eat? Do you want them to just serve? Do you want to invite siblings? Do you want to invite unschooled siblings? Siblings within the school, are they going to eat? You just have to think through all of those things. Prairie Day, we let the parents and the siblings eat. We all sit down. We string all the tables together outside and enjoy the prairie meal together. But if you were to do that for the Zeus's family reunion, you would have almost 80 people there. And that's no longer a feast. That's like a convention meal, you know. So, but just the thing is, think through that. All right, the components of a feast day. The first thing you want to do is you want to get your schedule. And by that, I mean you want to try to get as close to the day in the school year that you want to have your feast day. And you also want to plan your schedule of events within the day. And if you're thinking through these details, that's so easy to do because when in your handouts, you'll see the schedule for Prairie Day. And you can see how we start off together and then the girls do this while the boys do that. We have a little break where we eat that sweet little heart cake. And then the girls continue with their sewing and their churning butter and they're cooking the vegetables and the boys are chopping wood and so forth. So, you can think through those things early and get that schedule set up. The first thing I do in the summer is I get my lesson plan pages all set for the next year. I take the school calendar. I block off holidays. Those probably aren't going to change during the year. Our big events for the school, auction, night of recitation, evening of truth, beauty, and goodness, golf tournament, those are on the school schedule. And so you can get those in and see where your free weeks are in the school year. Also, if you do your scope and sequence early, you'll know, okay, I should be on card 9 by this week. That's 2 weeks after Olympic Day. We're going to have the Olympic card. So we're going to do Olympic Day that week. So you can get pretty close. Even if you don't know the exact date, you can still give parents a heads up. You can say, Prairie Day is tentatively scheduled for the first week in May, and then they can start planning if they take a family vacation or they're going to take off work. They have limited number of days they can take off. That gives them the opportunity to plan wisely. The next component of the feast day is the research project and presentation. Not all feast days will have a project. Little House on the Prairie, they come to Little House on the Prairie Day. But the Zeus's family reunion, we do a research project, the one I just told you about. Culture Kit, they research their country, and so they'll do a research project on that. I think through all of the expectations, and I tweak that at every year. What do I want them to learn through that research? We also have a Founding Fathers Day that the fifth graders do. They'll research one of the Founding Fathers or his wife. They'll dress in character and give a presentation about that character. So what do you want them to learn? Then I make a very detailed rubric. Because I want my students to succeed. I want them to do well. And so I want to communicate with them and their parents as clearly as possible what I expect of them. I make the standard high. I don't like poster board. By the time children work on poster board for 2 weeks and they glue things on it, it looks like crepe paper. I don't like poster board. So I tell them, you'll use a tri board. All this is in writing. And you'll do your letters this way and your gluing this way. The younger students, they've got to hear things like cutting should be straight on the line. As they get older, things should be centered. Things should be symmetrical. There should be balance. The things that they've learned in art, the principles in art, you want them to think, what did I learn in art class? Oh, I can do this on my board. I can make this beautiful by doing that. Do you want them to have it all typed? Do you want it handwritten? What's the standard? And as they're working, we do this during school. We work on this project together during school. I'm checking. The seventh grade teacher is checking. We say that's not written neatly enough. How can you make that a little more beautiful? So we're communicating to them what the standard is, so that they'll reach it. We want them to reach the standard. We don't want to say, guess what we want you to do, and then grade them on that. We're going to tell them. So I give them a checklist. As they come close to completing their project, I give them a checklist so they can critique themselves as well. Did I tell about the relationship between the characters, the Greek gods and goddesses? Did I do the Roman name for my Greek god so that they're keeping track of it themselves? And then my grading sheet generally covers exactly the same points. No surprises. I wanted you to tell me about the education system in your culture kit country. And that was on the rubric, and it's on the grading sheet and their checklist. Okay? You can put your students into groups. And I'll just tell you, the key to grouping students is to know your students. You have to know your students very well to group them appropriately. Who's who? Who are you going to assign in a group? Are you going to assign them to be specific characters? Be wise when you do that. Do you really want a student who already struggles with being thinking too highly of himself, do you want him to play Paris? You really want him to be that character? The new student who can't even raise his hand yet and speak a complete sentence, do you want him to be Zeus? Probably not. So know your students and be wise when you assign them those parts. Crafts, I've talked a little bit about that. Go for quality, the best quality that you can. Go for durability. You don't want them throwing it in the rubbish bin as soon as they get home because it couldn't even make the trip home from school. So go for quality and go for durability. Be frugal. Do what you can. For these big feast days, we usually ask for $5 from each student, and that will pretty much get the supplies that we need. We also, at our school, whatever box tops the children bring in, the teachers get that money when it comes in. So sometimes we can use our box top money for that. Again, don't despise the day of small beginnings. There was a period of time when the mosaics that we did on Greek Day were pieces of cardboard with little foam squares. And now we make a real mosaic. Right there, it's very pretty, isn't it? So anyhow, don't despise the day of small beginnings, but when you can, think a little more durable. Activities, just make them unforgettable. That dip candles and joust and shoot bows and arrows and whittle. We had a little boy cut his hand one time. I thought, oh no, we're never going to whittle again. And Mr. Trotter so graciously, we're not going to stop whittling. We're going to teach them how to whittle properly. And so we've had whittling every year. And last year they bought a set of whittling knives with their box top money. So anyhow, you can come up and look at some of these things. Make sure you get a handout if you didn't. Those are just some ideas that you can get from some of the feast days that we've done. The rest is pretty, I think every teacher knows how to make a food list. Make it authentic, as authentic as you can. There are a lot of resources for getting your food. But if you'll look on those handouts, I did put the full rubric for the Zeus's family reunion, but the other ones, I think, are just snippets of those days. Does anybody have a quick question before we leave? Yes, ma'am. I keep them in tubs, those big tubs, for each day. Like Olympic Day, I have everything in one tub. Egyptian Day has three tubs, and then they're just in my garage. So, yeah. Good. Well, I'm sorry. How many feasts do I do? In third grade, I do three big feasts, and I'm getting ready to add that Misty feast, too. I don't really consider my Chitty Chitty Bang Bang a big feast. It's just a picnic. Mm-hmm. And four, I don't know, that might be a little ambitious. I may need to not do Misty. But anyhow, I'm excited about doing Misty, so I'm probably going to do it at least for 1 year. So any other questions? I hope this has been helpful. If you need any other information, my email's up there. Please feel free to email me. And anyhow, thank you so much.